What is the cost of a human life? Some would say priceless, but for many others, it's the cost of medication and access to life-saving drugs and therapies. Unfortunately, global inequalities put basic essential drugs just out of reach for people in many parts of the world. But the drug industry says it's all just to cover its own costs. I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be taking a closer look at the cost of medications. One study estimated that the average cost of bringing a new drug to market fell between $1.3 to $2.8 billion. This cost is due to the higher initial cost to develop, market, and sell a brand new drug. And these estimates also take into account spending on failed trials of other drug candidates that didn't reach approval. The scientific challenges in drug discovery are another reason why drugs are so expensive. The R&D phase of creating a drug can range between $900 million to $2 billion, and pharma companies spend about 25% of their revenues on R&D. Afterwards, drugs undergo clinical trials that allow for FDA approval of new drugs. These trials can take months, even years, and they include testing for efficacy, dosage, and side effects. The trials have a median cost of $19 million with an approval rate for drugs entering clinical development of less than 12%. Then finally, there's the cost of marketing this new drug. Pharma companies spend around $30 billion on medical marketing each year. And now there's the cost of manufacturing, where the cost per treatment can range from a couple cents to a couple dollars. Cost of manufacturing is typically very low once the formula has been dialed in. Sovaldi by Gilead. This new hepatitis C drug received a lot of criticism when it hit the market since the cost of manufacturing was only $150. But Gilead charged $84,000. But as you can see, the cost of manufacturing is not the whole story. It didn't take into account the years and millions spent on R&D. So the matter is very complex. On the one hand, expensive drugs are unaffordable for most people throughout the globe. On the other hand, pharmaceutical companies, they can't develop breakthrough drugs without pouring millions into developing them. From their perspective, it's only fair to charge a price that will allow them to recoup their outlay and help them to continue researching and developing better drugs. And for more, let's bring in Vinay Krishnan, National Field Organizer, Center for Popular Democracy. So Krishnan, while pharma companies need to recover their R&D costs, many life-saving drugs are simply unaffordable. So are pharma companies justified in their pricing with the existing model, or does something need to be changed?
No, their pricing is definitely not justified. These are companies that value profit over people. They're motivated by how much money they can make, not on what is best in terms of healthcare outcomes and the care that people need. And we've definitely seen this with COVID, right? Kind of on a grand scale. You would think amidst a global crisis that when we develop these life-saving vaccines, that we'd want to share that with as many people as possible. We want to share with other countries. Certainly during a pandemic, with the understanding that you can't end a global pandemic with a single state solution, right? COVID existing in other countries means more variants are going to come to our shores. And it's also just the moral, sensible, responsible thing to share this technology. But that's not what's happened. Pfizer and Moderna have hoarded their technology and refused to give it away to other countries and teach them how to manufacture their vaccines. And as a result of that, we're entering year three, I guess 2.5 years now of this pandemic. And it shows no particular signs of stopping. And it reminds me of what Jonas Salk said after he invented the polio vaccine. I think it was Edward R. Murrow who asked him, you know, what's the patent status of the polio vaccine? And he said, like, well, there is no patent, like it belongs to the people. And then he said, like, rhetorically, like, can you patent the sun? Because it was inexplicable for him to think that people would hoard that technology. Of course, if you develop a life-saving medication, you should share it with the world. But again, that's not what's happened. Pfizer has used this crisis to increase their wealth, and they've done that very, very effectively. In 2021, Pfizer's revenue was $81.3 billion, which was double what it was the year before, and that's only continued to increase. And I think they have like over 70% of the market on vaccines right now. And I actually found out earlier this morning that because demand is waning a bit and governments are buying less vaccines, Pfizer is now looking to get into the private marketplace, and they're suggesting possibly quadrupling the price of their vaccine. So future boosters and vaccines will no longer be free for us. Again, this is in the COVID realm, this is kind of an extreme mass level example, but this is happening across the board on all sorts of medications, right? It's happening on insulin, it's happening on cancer medications. This is not certainly, it's not unique to COVID, I should say. And as a result of that, when these companies are producing these drugs and they have monopolies on them, they can pretty much pay, pretty much charge however much they want. And that puts, you know, us, people who depend on these drugs to survive, in positions where we have to choose between medications and food, or medications and rent, or medications and housing. One of our members, a friend of mine, someone we organize with, she needed a dental procedure, dental surgery, but her daughter needed medication, and without the medication, her daughter couldn't survive, and she had to choose between the two. So she just did not get the dental surgery, which she badly needed in order to care for her daughter. And I'd like to think in the wealthiest country in the world, like, no one should have to make those choices. That's what's happening all across the country right now. And we hear those stories all the time with the people we organize. So yeah, to get back to your question, like, no, it's a bad faith system built on maximizing profit, not on improving health outcomes.
Prescription drugs in the U.S. on average cost around 2.5 times more than those same drugs in other Western countries. Why is that?
Well, other countries have a different value system. They see these medications as being a public good. And because of that, they have regulatory agencies whose job it is to negotiate lower prices. And that just doesn't really exist here. Until recently, it didn't really exist here at all. It's the pharmaceutical companies who are deciding how much to cost for their medications. And unless there's a cheaper alternative, unless there's a generic alternative, they can pretty much charge whatever they want. And that's why they just drive up prices as much as they can, and they try to get as much profit as possible. And that's their motivation. And recently we did get like a huge victory on this front, which it's important to mention. In the recent Inflation Reduction Act that just passed, we were able to get Medicare the power to negotiate lower drug prices on behalf of everyone who's on Medicare, which is a lot of people. And that's a huge victory. It's not a small thing. People in the healthcare world have been working towards that for a very, very long time. And it's like here at the Center for Popular Democracy, we've been working on that for like over a year, because it started as Build Back Better, and we eventually ended up with the IRA. But we did like bird dogging and civil disobedience and lobby visits and all kinds of rallies. And if you remember, we went on kayaks and like surrounded Senator Manchin's yacht and like asked him, you know, to vote to protect and expand our healthcare. So that was a huge win for us. And we'd like to go further. But yeah, we took a big chunk of Big Pharma's power away from them, but they still have way too much power, which is particularly a problem in this country. And yeah, that's why it's just getting worse.
And now a study has found that the launch prices of new drugs rose on average by 11% every year from 2008 to 2021. What do you think is driving this?
What's driving that is greed, mostly. Particularly in a time of crisis, these last couple of years, through COVID, as we've talked about with Pfizer and Moderna, they've used crisis to drive profit. And we see that happening in housing and real estate. It's going to continue to happen as COVID continues, other pandemics come, as climate crises come. These companies are just doing whatever they can to drive profit. And another way we've tried to stop that, I mentioned the Inflation Reduction Act. We also got a victory there in that now, once this goes into effect, for Medicare, companies won't be able to raise the price of their drug, which they're doing, as you mentioned, every year. They won't be able to do it higher than the rate that inflation is rising. And if they do raise their prices more than inflation is rising, they have to pay Medicare a rebate. So we are working on that. But it kind of just really comes down to the American value system, which is this like rugged, individualistic, competitive atmosphere where people are trying to maximize profit. And so unless we take action, it's going to continue to get worse and worse every year. There's no reason for them to stop unless we stop them, which is why we're like organizing people, directly impacted people who have these healthcare stories. And we got some big victories recently, but a lot of those victories aren't going to take effect for a couple of years. So we have to keep at it. But as under the status quo, there's no reason for them not to just continue to maximize their profit. So we're going to see that trend continue unless we stop it.
And now Big Pharma has always been an industry riddled with scandal, with the latest being the part they played in the opioid crisis. So are there any restrictions placed on Big Pharma about how they market their products and negotiate kickbacks with doctors?
The short answer is not really, like not restrictions we'd like. The FDA cannot limit the amount of money that companies are spending on advertising, and they can't really ban advertising for drugs that have serious health risks to us. So as a result of that, you get this like huge, sprawling, multi-billion dollar advertising industry around healthcare, right? And in the same way that Coca-Cola wants us to drink their soda and the NFL wants us to watch their football games on Sundays, these companies want us to use their drugs. And it doesn't particularly matter to them if there's a cheaper drug or a drug that's safer or a drug that works better for us. They just want us to consume their product. And it's just, you know, that business model to maximize profit. And that's not how healthcare should be run. Healthcare should be run by doctors interacting with their patients and acting in the best interests of those patients. But that's not really what it is. And I think, if I remember correctly, that's America, New Zealand, maybe a few other countries. But other than that, no one else is allowed to market these drugs directly to consumers. But in America, you can, because it's all deregulated. And yeah, that also drives up costs. It's just this business model, this huge industry to create these ads. And I don't think, you know, advertisers and people working in social media accounts for these drug companies should be deciding what's best for my healthcare or my family's healthcare or my friend's healthcare or anyone in my anyone in my community. But that's what's happening right now. And I think you also asked about these companies influencing doctors' decisions, and that's happening also. There isn't really anything to stop these companies from sending money in terms of gifts, perks, trips to doctors to get them to prescribe certain drugs. And they're often driving the prescription of these like huge brand name drugs when there are generics available that are cheaper and the patient might not get that information. So yeah, pretty much at every level here, you have profit as a motivator, right? Because you have these companies who are, you know, insisting that we buy their drugs. You have insurance companies who are trying to like get out of it and like only allow the care that's cheapest. You have doctors who are influenced by pharmaceutical companies. So like none of those motivators are health-based, right? It's all just profit-based. And that's pretty much at every level. And the result is the system we have right now.
Thank you so much, Vinay Krishnan, for your insights. And when we come back, groups like Doctors Without Borders are asking governments to revoke patents granted to pharmaceutical companies, especially in Africa. Are patents the problems to access affordable vaccines and medications? We'll have more after the break.
The Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Got start some kind of, forming their own perception that evil and hero. They are putting President Zelensky as a hero and bringing him in every sphere of life, and they are giving him the opportunity to share his views, not only in forums and summits, but also in universities to the younger people. Whereas making President Putin as a villain, but that is definitely not the case. And we know that he understands what is good for their nation, which is good for its people.
Today, one-fourth of the world's population lacks access to essential medicines, primarily in the poorest parts of Africa and Asia. Because of this, groups like Doctors Without Borders and the People's Health Movement, they're calling on the South African government to revoke patents granted to pharmaceutical companies Eli Lilly and Moderna for its COVID-19 medicine and the mRNA vaccine. They argue that these patents will undermine people's access to life-saving treatments and will prolong the pandemic for everyone. For example, treatments like baricitinib for COVID-19, which generic manufacturers in India and Bangladesh charge only $7 per 14-day treatment. But in South Africa, the same treatment goes for $270 per 14 days due to the patents blocking the production of generics in South Africa. Global inequality in access to medicines has been shoved into the spotlight now with the COVID pandemic. South Africa is looking to push patent reform laws so that patents no longer block generic producers from entering the market to produce and supply more affordable medical tools. According to the FDA, generic medications can cost on average 80 to 85% less than the brand name equivalents. India has emerged as a global leader in producing pharmaceuticals, although it still relies heavily on China for the active pharmaceutical ingredients. And now to dive deeper on this issue, let's bring in Vinay Krishnan, National Field Organizer at the Center for Popular Democracy. So Krishnan, patents obviously play a very important role in the pharma industry. So how long do these patents typically last before generics can start producing lower cost biosimilars?
Well, that's actually something we're working on right now. We're a part of this campaign called Make Medicines Affordable, and we don't want to wait for congressional action on this issue. We want President Biden to actually use his executive power to lift patents. He has broad authority to lift patents on pretty much anything, not just in the healthcare realm, but pretty much on any kind of product. And we are hoping that he will lift patents on certain drugs and allow for the generic production of those drugs. And we did an action outside the HHS building in DC recently, where we had directly impacted people telling their stories and asking President Biden, you know, like, the Inflation Reduction Act was a huge victory. Like, thank you for doing what you did to get Medicare drug pricing. But we actually want you to use executive power to go much further and lift patents on those drugs. And in terms of the international scope of things, I think COVID, again, is a good example. Because Pfizer and Moderna own those patents on their vaccines, you have like countries all across the world who haven't even gotten their first dose yet. Meanwhile, here, like, restrictions are lifting and people are talking about a post-COVID era, which does not exist. We're very much still in this era. So again, like, intellectual property rights should not stand in the way of public health, and all too often it does. So we're exploring mechanisms where we can lift those patents, both for patients here in America, but also in a global context when we talk about global pandemics.
So there are obviously two sides to this argument. Yes, medicines are expensive and the patents make it inaccessible for many of the poorer nations. But on the other hand, if it wasn't priced high, then pharma companies wouldn't invest so heavily into R&D. So how do we solve this problem?
I think oftentimes when you hear that argument, it's often coming in bad faith, because a lot of the times the research and development is driven by taxpayer money. Like, if you think about Moderna, so much of their resources come from the American government, which comes from taxpayers. And even in those instances when it's like, you know, it's us paying for this vaccine and then we're facing all these barriers to actually access it. So I think that's often a bad faith argument there certainly is truth to it, and that we want people to continue to innovate and invest in research and development and creating new medicines and technologies and vaccines. So I'm sure there are, like, you know, regulations and compromises that we can implement there. But, like, we're so far outside the realm of any sort of reasonable discussion on, you know, how to do that, because these people aren't acting in good faith. They're just driving up profits to the tune of billions and billions of dollars, as, you know, estimates vary. Some folks are saying, like, 6 million people have died globally. Some folks are saying 15 million have died globally, because it's such an undercount. So I think we're far away from any, like, good faith discussion on how to balance innovation and, you know, what's good for the public, because that's just not really in their interests right now.
And now all of this revolves around having new policy in place to rein back drug makers. But is that really possible when Big Pharma is so influential with its donations and lobbyists that it basically has key policymakers in its back pockets to protect the industry?
That's a great question. That's something I wrestle with all the time. I think everyone working in public health, we wrestle with that, whether it's actually possible to change the system. I like to believe that it is. I think if we're, you know, seeking these, like, minor tweaks here or there, these minor reforms here or there, that's not really going to get the job done. And sometimes those minor reforms actually further legitimize a system that is illegitimate. So I'm pushing for something far more radical, something far more transformative, which would be universal healthcare in this country. Like, we believe at the Center for Popular Democracy, and our affiliates and allies certainly believe, that healthcare is a human right. And patents shouldn't stand in the way of healthcare, profit shouldn't stand in the way of healthcare, which is nice to say, but how do you actually, like, get to there, which is, I think, you know, the root of your question. And we're figuring it out. Like, we believe that it's people who have the power, and there are many ways that we can flex that power. If you think about, you know, if we could decouple healthcare from employment, then that would give strength to the labor movement, because then people would be able to, like, engage in strikes and slowdowns without worrying if they're going to lose their insurance, right? And then if we flex that capitalist power against the capitalists with concrete demands, like, who knows what we can accomplish. So we're organizing people who are, like, directly impacted, bringing them to their legislators over and over again. And we found over time, if you do that through just, like, conversations and bird dogging and lobby visits and protests, like, you definitely can enact significant change. I'll give you an example. Like, if you remember 2017, the Republicans were trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And this was, like, early on in the Trump regime. And we were told, like, well, there's no way you're going to stop this. Like, there's no way you're going to get through 4 to 8 years and still have the Affordable Care Act. And so we brought people, you know, just people from across the country who were directly impacted. We sent them to town halls to tell healthcare stories. We brought them to DC, and we engaged in civil disobedience in Senate offices. And these were people with disabilities, people with illnesses, just telling their stories, using their people power. And we convinced 3 Republican senators to vote to protect the ACA. And you would think that would be, like, nearly impossible to do. You would think these are people who wouldn't want to do that. But we were able to do that. And that was in the, you know, height of the Trump era. So I'm encouraged by that. I think it's possible. I just think we need to amass that people power. I think lots of people, you know, want to change these things, but don't feel like they have agency. So I like to think it's my job as an organizer to convince them that they do, and actually organize them and mobilize them. So I think that's the way to do it, and just empower people to actually make that change.
And how can countries in Africa expand manufacturing capacity for generic drugs?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of that is the same kind of, you know, people power centered organizing that I discussed earlier. But a lot of the, in terms of international scope, a lot of it goes to the World Trade Organization. And, like, we've been supporting what's called a TRIPS waiver, which would temporarily waive intellectual property rights on vaccines, tests, and treatments, and really get it out to the rest of the world. And that's part of, like, an international coalition of organizers that's not just here. Like, I'm in New York, there's folks around our country, then folks, you know, all across the world who are pushing for that TRIPS waiver. And there's a lot of international solidarity around that, international organizing. And, I mean, I think if we work across our borders and build our people power, we could do good work in the WTO. We actually, a lot of it does depend on kind of more powerful, wealthier nations to play ball, so to speak. And we did get President Biden to commit to waiving that waiver. He actually hasn't done it yet. But I think countries working together, in those arenas where they have influence, like the WTO, and really building power there. That could be a way to do it. But again, in order for that to actually happen, I think you will need that broad scale, like mass organizing, on a level that maybe we haven't really seen before, because this isn't really the crisis we've ever seen before. And as bad as this particular crisis is, and I mean COVID when I say that, like the climate crises to come will actually be worse, and we'll be facing different pandemics and healthcare challenges that we're clearly not prepared for. So I do think these are not problems that can be solved in a single country or a single state or a single city. We're gonna have to build broad international coalitions to organize properly around this.
Thank you so much, Vinay Krishnan, for your time and insight. While the winner here is obviously Big Pharma, we have to talk about the losers who are really paying the price. While patents are necessary to protect a company's proprietary research for a period of time, pharmaceutical companies have now gamed the system to their advantage. Drug makers are able to extend the patents on their drugs, keeping generics off the market through a process known as evergreening. They do this by making small little adjustments to drugs, which then sustain their monopolies for several years. Drug companies, on average, file more than 140 patent applications per drug to extend their monopolies and prolong their profits while hiking up their prices once the drug becomes familiar to people. While the practice of evergreening isn't necessarily illegal, it is unethical and shows that the patent system is being manipulated to Big Pharma's advantage. This costs citizens upwards of $1,000 annually on prescription medication that would otherwise be a fraction if manufactured generically. So in the end, it is the poorer nation and citizens that gets trapped in a cycle of poverty as the cost of medication remains inaccessible. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you back here next time on The Cost of Everything.